From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Andrea Seabrook. As President Bush continued his African tour today, he won praise from Tanzania's president for U.S. help in fighting HIV/AIDS and malaria. Among the U.S. projects in Africa are malaria vaccine studies conducted by the National Institutes of Health involving the Malinke people of Mali. Reporter Addie Goss recently visited an NIH-funded facility in the village of Bankmana.
Bankmana wakes up to the sound of women pounding millet outside their mud huts. During the rainy season here, the rice fields are flooded, mosquitoes are born, and malaria is like the flu. Everybody gets it. Modibo Jabate is a griot, a kind of village journalist. In Bankmana, he says, there's a severe form of malaria that kills the children. The Malinke call it konon, which means bird.
L'enfant convulse, ouvre les yeux.
The child convulses. He opens his eyes wide and screeches. It's like a bird has seized him.
There's a small health clinic here, but it can take people days to gather the few dollars for prescriptions. So until recently, most parents brought their sick children to the village healer, who gives them traditional medicine. They'd pay him in kola nuts.
Les gens sont là à la merci de...
People were at the mercy of the mosquitoes. Many children never reached 10 years.
Then, about 15 years ago, a Malian doctor came to Bankmana to study which strains of malaria were making kids sick. His name is Ogobara Dumbo, or Ogo, and the griot Jabate remembers that from the start, Ogo saved lives.
Donc on vient dans la famille. Hey, madame.
He went to families and he asked, Madame, what brings malaria? There were some who said it was cold water, some who said it was the mangoes, and Ogo said no. It's mosquitoes. You have to protect yourself. Clean your yard. Sleep under a mosquito net. Don't let containers of water sit around.
A few years ago, the Malian Dr. Ogo got a grant from the U.S. National Institutes of Health to start testing a malaria vaccine in 300 children here. Over time, that grant helped build a medical research center in the middle of Bankmana. They built it side by side with the local clinic, which didn't even have water or electricity. Ogo says parents signed their kids up for the vaccine trials partly as a matter of village pride.
They think they have opportunity to participate in an international challenge of developing a vaccine to save the life of thousands and millions of kids. Really, the first volunteer I have had, they say, if you get a vaccine, they will say Bankmana was the first village. That makes them very proud, I can tell you.
There would be two groups of children. One would get a shot containing the experimental malaria vaccine. The other would get a shot of the control, a flu vaccine that had already been shown to be safe. The experimental vaccine had been tested for safety in adults in Mali and in the United States with no significant problems. But the only children who would receive the vaccine were 36 kids in another village. This raises questions for ethicists like Lawrence Gostin at Georgetown Law School. He says, ideally, you don't want to give vulnerable people like the Malinke anything that hasn't first been proven safe in children in the developed world.
Questions of, is there an undue incentive? Do the parents really understand? Is there the same culture? All loom very large.
But the NIH-funded researchers say they're doing everything they can to avoid exploiting the villagers. Most parents in Bankmana are illiterate, so the researchers read them an explanation of what the vaccine is and what the risks are. And they take pains to make sure parents understand what they've been read. Gostin says the bottom line is a malaria vaccine could save countless lives. And as they test it, NIH is providing desperately poor Malians with health care they wouldn't otherwise have.
There are some ethicists that think that if you have a trial in a developing country, that you use exactly the same standards as you do in the United States. I don't believe that that's true, because I think that if you take that standard, you end up not doing any service to people that are suffering desperately.
The researchers treat any child enrolled in the study for any illness. Parents here say they've enrolled their children for just that reason, because they can't afford to go to the village clinic. Then, to make sure they're not coercing people, the researchers also provide some health services to villagers who are not participating in the vaccine trials. Like this little boy. His dad took him to the village clinic today, and the doctor wanted to do some blood tests for liver failure, but the clinic doesn't have anything even close to a lab. So the doctor called the NIH-funded researchers, and now the boy is at the research center, having blood drawn for tests. The researchers do this for free. Even the traditional healer, Nyangana Fode, says he's thrilled the researchers have taken his patients away.
Before they came, I never slept because everyone brought their sick babies to me. Now, when a child comes here with a fever, I send him to the researchers.
The healer says this while sitting in bed in his hut. Over his head is a mosquito net the doctors gave him. Another day ends in Bankmana. Men and women walk back from the fields, and their children gather at the research center, one of the few places in town with electricity, to watch TV. For NPR News, I'm Addie Goss.
We know it's primary season, but that may be the only season that's clear. In Los Angeles, there was rain and 40-degree temperatures not long ago. Sarasota swimmers got goosebumps climbing out of heated pools. And here in the nation's capital, it was almost 70 degrees on a recent day before the temperature plunged back down to the 20s. These big chills made NPR special correspondent Susan Stamberg decide it was time to knit.
Airport security confiscated my tube of toothpaste last week, but for some reason didn't mind the lethal-looking size 11 needles I'm using to knit. Not a sweater or scarf, although warm would certainly be welcome right now, but no, I'm knitting my very first baby blanket for my very first grandchild, granddaughter. Avidly expected in the middle of April. It's the first knitting I've done in decades, and it brings back so many memories. Here at NPR, hosting All Things Considered in the 1970s, I knitted my way through various 70s upheavals, including the Watergate hearings, of course. Nixon, Haldeman, Ehrlichman, Sirica, and Irvin became part of the stitchery. Knit 1, Smoking Gun, Pearl 2, by Agnew. I felt like Madame Defarge, that Charles Dickens character in A Tale of Two Cities, who knitted her way through the French Revolution, casting on the names of aristocrats she thought deserved the guillotine. As an impartial journalist, my sweaters and mufflers were created with vigilance rather than vengeance. I found the knitting calming in those turbulent times, and it focused the mind in a way that was useful. By the end of Watergate, I'd filled a bureau drawer with the results of all that concentration, accumulated warmth for my husband and son. A decade later, still on All Things Considered, I took up the needles again, always in big sizes, then as now, 11s, 10s, even 13s sometimes. I like knitting projects that go quickly. This time, I was trying to quit smoking and needed something to keep my hands busy. So, in the 1980s, the Reagans inspired the woolen work. He said, "Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall." I tore up three rows of bumpy cable stitches and began making unisize sweaters to be shared by the family. Our son had grown so much it was taking too much time to knit for him and his dad. And now, in this new century, here I am again, counting rows of knits and pearls for the arrival of a brand new member of the family. What a time in which to be born, an historic moment in the life of our democracy, when a woman or an African American will be their party's nominee for president. And a baby, arriving in a few months, will never know a nation in which it was not possible for either a female or a black to rise so high. Perhaps she'll be a knitter too, this little girl child, and use those skills, the knits and pearls that turn a simple strand of wool into something comforting, even consoling at times, to mark the historic or personal landmarks in her life. I'm Susan Stamberg, NPR News.